Talking Leafs podcast.
They have won the Stanley Cup!
Subscribe so you don't miss an episode on Spotify, SoundCloud, or Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Here's Nick D'Souza and Kevin Papetti.
Welcome to the Everything Leafs podcast. I'm Kevin Papetti here with Nick D'Souza. I want to say as always, but it's been a while, so I don't know what to say. But Nick, we were at Real Sports on Friday, so I know how you've been. But for the listeners out there who haven't heard your voice in about 6 months, how have you been?
Has it only been 6 months? I feel like it's been year, potentially.
I think the last one we did... So there's a bit of gray area here because we recorded a couple, we had audio issues, and we kind of gave up. So we're trying again here. It's probably like round three. But we had recorded a few at the start of the season that just never made air. But the last one that actually went out was the Leafs losing to Florida, I think.
I would say so. I think just at the end of the season. And since then, we've had GM changes. We've had personnel changes. We've had free agencies. We've had a lot of different stuff, and obviously the trade deadline that just happened a couple days ago. So definitely a lot to talk about today, Kevin.
Yeah, this is the emergency pod for the Cade Weber trade. So it's going to be about 2 hours of Cade Weber. We'll see if we get to anything
else. Come on, Cade Weber honestly might be the sixth most important thing that's happened in the last few days. And number one is definitely Joey Duzak versus the Marlies. That's the number one thing that's happened. That's really why we had this podcast in the first place.
That is reason for an emergency pod, the Kyle Clifford roughing penalty on Joey Duzak, the celebration.
Shout out to Todd Crocker. I think, unbelievable call on that one.
So just back on topic. So I guess the goal for today, obviously we've had, I mean, we can talk maybe briefly about the offseason, but I think more importantly the trade deadline that just happened. Hoping to be rational and somewhat level-headed. I think there's plenty to be positive about. You know, the Leafs are still good. Matthews, Marner, Nylander are all having great years. The Leafs have a chance to win a cup. I don't know if they're the favorite, but, I mean, they played very well in February. They have two good goalies. They have depth at forward, depth on defense. Definitely some weaknesses, but plenty to be positive about. At the same time, I think there's definitely things to pick apart a bit, a little bit to be negative about. I don't know if it's the same type of team they had last year or as good. Obviously they didn't go out and add much at the deadline, but I guess just Nick, to start, just overall thoughts on the trade deadline here that we just saw a couple days ago.
I think you touched upon it pretty well there. There's a few different lenses that you can use to look at this trade deadline. The main one I've looked at is I do factor in the contracts on the team, where they are as a franchise, as a roster really, and how they did in the offseason. Now, what I mean by that is virtually you're in the last year of Matthews Nylander's contract. Next year, both numbers are going to be higher in terms of the AAV. They had money to spend this offseason, so they did spend it on one-year deals for Bertuzzi, Domi, Klingberg. That was a bit of a luxury just because they knew they had Holmberg and Robertson and McMahon. They had Wohl on a very good contract. McCabe is $2.2 million a year. So they had some extra money. And they used it on one-year deals, knowing that this year in particular was going to be a very important year in their contending window. So when you look at it through that lens, I was a bit surprised they kind of held on to the first rounder. And, you know, I don't think they really needed to trade Easton Cowan or probably not Minton either to make a huge splash, especially when you look at the other prices around the league. So I was a little surprised that they didn't go out and get a top four defenseman. And, you know, there have been some throughout the year that were available. So I would say through that lens, they were a bit underwhelming. Actually, not a bit. They were underwhelming. But to be a little bit on the bright side, I would say they have been a team that's really struggled to defend leads. They've been a team that's just struggled to defend throughout the year at 5-on-5 as well. So getting Lyubushkin, getting Edmondson, I mean, we'll see how good they actually play. They're coming from teams where they didn't play very well and they weren't on very good teams. So we'll see. But I do like the Duer trade, getting a guy that's cost controlled and that can definitely penalty kill and definitely defend. So we'll see. I'll give it like a C- or a C, just kind of factoring in everything. Is that where you are, Kevin, or you're a little higher on it?
I think the trades themselves, like in a vacuum, are fine. I think, like, obviously they didn't spend a second round pick. They didn't spend a first round pick. They didn't go out and trade Fraser Minton. So I think a big part of this is, like, in a vacuum, I think all the trades are perfectly fine. It's not like they paid crazy prices. But I would have liked to see them go out and get a bit more of a difference maker up front. I think this is a team that, you know, they have very clear strengths. They have star talent. You look at the teams they're going to have to go through, Florida, Boston. It would have been nice to get add a little bit more firepower, I think, up front. Or go out and get, like, a no doubt about it top four defenseman. So I think, obviously, like, the cupboard was a bit bare in terms of picks. You don't, you know, you can't really, it's not really fair compared to last year where you went out and spent a first and got Ryan O'Reilly, for example. But I do think that they probably should have put a few more chips in the pot for this year. And you know, I think Lobushkin's been very, I think he's off to a great start. I think he looks like a great partner for Morgan Riley. I liked him in his first go around, especially early. I thought he kind of faded away in the playoffs and wasn't that effective. So we'll see. He's off to a great start again. But I think for a third, that was a fine price. I think Edmondson is kind of pointless to me. Like, I don't really know if he's an upgrade on Benoit, who he took out of the lineup. I was fine with Mark Giordano as a seventh defenseman. If they take Liljegren out, then they're really going to struggle in terms of puck moving, I think. And they'll have five left shooting defensemen. So I didn't really get the Edmondson one. We'll see what he does. It's still early. He's played one game. It's a little bit too early to judge. Obviously, if it goes terribly, I mean, he was a third round pick. You can help make him a healthy scratch. And then Dewar is not a rental. Like, he's an RFA. Hopefully, he can help the penalty kill. I think he's a fine player. He could prove to be a pretty good depth pickup. But we'll see. Obviously, the penalty kill got scored on last night against Montreal in game one. I think Toronto's penalty kill is a big issue. But I think really what this conversation comes down to is, should they have done more? It's not that they overpaid. It's not like they made bad trades. It's just, should they have gone out and traded maybe a guy like Fraser Minton, or put someone like Nick Robertson on the table, or Pontus Holmberg on the table? You know, not necessarily that they're worth a first-round pick, but they might have value that could help you go out and get a bigger piece that can make more of a difference. It feels like they just didn't really move the needle much. It's just, they're the same team. They're making some small moves to hopefully address a weakness or two a little bit, but it's not like, definitely not like Vegas, but not even like most contenders. Even if you like look at Edmonton, who they added, if you look at Winnipeg, if you look at the Rangers, go down the list, the Leafs kind of did, and really the whole Atlantic Division did very, very little to address their weaknesses and improve. So, I don't know. I think a C is fine. Like, it's just they didn't really have enough substance there to warrant, like, an A or anything, but hopefully these players complement the Leafs well. Like, hopefully Duar can really help the penalty kill. Hopefully Lobushkin continues to play well with Riley. Hopefully Edmondson, we kind of see the reason for that trade in a week or two, and he's playing really well. We'll see. But, yeah, I'd say, I don't know, C plus. A little bit boring of a deadline, let's put it that way.
Definitely. I think we saw a lot of rumors. It looks like Trey Living definitely inquired on a lot of players, Tanev, Zadorov. I'm sure he asked about Parayko, but just from talking to and just seeing Calgary fans' tweets, talking to some writers in Calgary, it seems like Trey Living just in general has his price and he sets, that's what the price is. He's not going to overpay, especially at the deadline. Like, when you look at how Calgary has kind of operated at the deadline over the last 5 or 6 years, especially the ones where they were contending, they looked very similar to what the Leafs deadline looked like this time. Kind of adding around the edges, but not really too much impactful players that were added. So yeah, I think that, I know we see a lot of narratives, especially in the last 48 hours, about how this impacts how the management sees the core, and, you know, the core now needs to be the ones that carry them over the hump. I don't know how much stock I put into that. To me, it's just the management had set prices that they felt they wanted to give for certain players, and in the end, they didn't want to overpay, and kind of this is what they came up with. So to me, one narrative in particular that I just don't really understand is how now it doesn't really matter what the non-core four players do, because all that matters is the core four they have to produce. I don't believe in that at all. I mean, we're in a season where Matthews is on a 70 goal pace, sorry. Marner's having a good season. Tavares is starting to pick it up, and Nylander's having a career year, and they're still the third best team in the division. So clearly outside of the core four, how good that team is, the whole team, that matters. And even if the core four produces, like, they can still lose a series. We saw that in Tampa 2 years ago, and we're seeing it right now in the regular season in this really, really tough Atlantic division. So I wanted to get that out there before we move on.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, the whole thing where it's like, it's not going to matter if the core four doesn't produce. Maybe. Like, I think if you're going to win a cup, if you're going to win four series, you're probably going to have at least one of the four series where, you know, Matthews has a low shooting percentage, or William Nylander has a low shooting percentage. Your third line matters, your fourth line matters. You need, and especially your defense. Like, obviously, if the core four go cold come playoff time, they're probably not going to win. But there is a chance where they play okay, where they play well, and they still lose because, you know, their depth isn't there, their penalty kill struggles, etc. So, you know, the reason that we care about, like, a Bertuzzi signing or Domi signing is because the depth matters. You want to be winning all four lines, all three pairs versus the other team. Definitely, you know, the Leafs do still have a chance to win a cup. There's no question about that. When you have Matthews, if Joseph Woll gets hot or Ilya Samsonov gets hot at the right time, who knows? I think this team is easily good enough to go on a run, especially if they could get some luck. Or who knows, maybe you run into injuries on the other team, things become a little bit easier. We'll see. But yeah, I think, as you said, like, that whole, what does it matter, the rest of the team, what they do, it's not a good analysis, I guess. But I want to get into, I think, part of the evaluation of this team, and, you know, when we're talking about how much chips do you put in this year versus saving futures for future years, is just this team in general and the season in general. And I do think we need to talk about Drew Living, the job he's done since he's taken over. I think just off the start here, like, I know a large section of the fan base has a bit of a hatred for Kyle Dubas, and it seems like any type of conversation for Drew Living comes down to, well, he's not Dubas, like, he's immune to criticism. I get it, but at the same time, I think, you know, we can't be talking about Dubas in, like, 2028. Like, I think Drew Living's a GM now. I want to talk about what he's doing and what he's done since taking over. And I think ultimately it's been very, very low risk for Drew Living, whether it's the offseason or the deadline. Like, he hasn't really done substantial moves that have any type of risk or really all that much reward either, right? Like, Bertuzzi's a one-year deal, Domi's a one-year deal, Klingberg's a one-year deal. You know, even if those players were outstanding, it's just a one-year deal. If they're terrible, again, it's just a one-year deal. The signings he made this offseason with Term, David Kampf, Ryan Reeves, like, Reeves can pretty much be buried in the NHL if it all goes south. Kampf, like, what's the worst-case scenario there? You retain $1 million, maybe. He hasn't traded, like, a first-round pick. He hasn't traded big prospects. He's kind of just built around the edges, and I think there's positives to that and there's negatives to that. I think the positive is, you know, it's not like he's gone out and made a move that's going to be detrimental to the team in the future. Like, he didn't go out and sign Jack Campbell to that type of deal, for example. It's not like he did, like, the Kadri trade for Barry, where it's going to have, you know, implications for years to come. But he hasn't done the opposite either, where, you know, he's gone out and, like, say, traded Fraser Minton for some amazing defenseman, right? He hasn't really done any big swings. I would have liked a big swing at some point. Obviously, you hope it would be a good trade rather than a bad trade. But I would say so far, it's hard to give him, like, an A+. It's hard to give him an F, just because the big swings haven't really been there yet. I think, again, you would have liked to see, if you're going to get an A from me, I would have liked to see a little bit more moves or significant moves. I'd say so far it's been kind of low risk, low reward for Drew Living this far.
I think that's quite fair. I guess, no, I don't think anything you said I can disagree with. I think the only one, I guess the Reeves one, I know that he can be buried, but he just hasn't, right? Like, he hasn't been buried. They had to trade away Lafferty in order to pretty much stay cap compliant. He stayed on the team. And even at the trade deadline, I know people are talking about all this retention. Really, when you look at it in hindsight, and this might be a little bit nitpicking, but in the end, they had to get that extra retention really because they were quite tight in terms of the cap anyways. But the doer is only 800,000. So really they had to do the extra retention to kind of keep Reeves on the team in general. Like, if you assume that he's probably the worst player on the roster in terms of just regular value that he's giving in terms of hockey, instead of the extracurriculars, then they kind of had to do that extra retention just to stay cap compliant getting into the deadline. So I do think there was some risk in terms of the Reeves one, but other than that, yeah, there hasn't been very much, you know, huge moves that we can really even talk about with Trey Living. He has kind of used, I think he had a pretty good situation coming into this. They had a lot of flexibility and, you know, not that many big contracts that were negative value contracts. And I think he's used that wisely. The Klingberg, Domi, Bertuzzi deals, I like that they were 1 year deals because clearly they saw this year as a big opportunity to spend and use that money, and they did. So obviously Klingberg didn't work out. Domi's been okay, and Bertuzzi I think has been a great signing. So yeah, I think you're right. The pretty low risk, low reward, and he's kind of taken what he's been given. He hasn't really tried to push the envelope at all, but he also hasn't really burned too much other than maybe Klingberg and giving Reeves that that term.
Yeah, so I guess if we go back and we rewind to the start of the offseason, it was a decent year to kind of go for it, right? Because you had Joseph Woll very cheap, a very cheap goaltending duo. Matthews, Nylander are kind of in their last year of their deal before they get a big raise. You still have Nyes on a cheap deal. You have guys like Bobby McMahon, Timothy Liljegren very cheap. You have McCabe at $2 million. And you really have no bad contracts. They caught a bit of a break with Matt Murray going to LTIR for the year. So heading into the offseason, they basically had about $16 million to spend, right? And they needed, if you look at what their roster was at the time, they kind of had their top six, like a top six sorted out. Like, they could go Nyes, Matthews, Marner. Then they could go Yarncroke, Tavares, Nylander, right? You also had Bobby McMahon, Pontus Holmberg, Sam Lafferty. Let's call that a fourth line. So with 16.2, you just needed one line, you needed one right shooting defenseman, and then maybe a seventh defenseman. And you look at how they spent the money, because again, this was a team with like no bad contracts, right? So I think there was reasons to expect in this year, before those raises kick in, that this would be a good year to go for. They have a better team than most years. And I don't know if it's there. Like, I thought the Bertuzzi, Domi signings, that took up about, let's call it half that cap space. I think both have been completely fine. Getting them on one-year deals was, I think, key, just given the raises that were coming. I think they've been completely fine. It's just, like, I don't know if I can say Bertuzzi had surplus value. Like, I wouldn't say Bertuzzi's been a $7 million player or anything. I think he's been about what his contract is.
Right.
Same with Domi, right? Like, he's about a $3 million forward. He's kind of like a $4 million forward offensively, but the defense takes some of that away. I think they're fine players. I like that they bring toughness. They slot in pretty well. Domi can play center or wing. Bertuzzi is a good fit, I think, even though he was struggling to score for the start of the year. It was the other moves where you still have about, you know, let's call the 70. It's just going to be a league minimum guy. You have about $7 million left for a right shooting defenseman and a bottom six center. And they basically used that $7 million on 2.4 for David Kampf, 4.2 for Klingberg, and then another like $200K to swap out Lafferty for Reeves. And that's where things have kind of have gone downhill. You look at the deadline, and a lot of the moves they've made should have almost not had to be made, if that makes sense, where Kampf is a $2.4 million center. You're paying him that to be your penalty kill guy, to be your shutdown guy. Like, you shouldn't really need Connor Dewar for penalty kill if you have a $2.4 million penalty killing specialist in camp, right? Like, the fact that the camp's results have been very poor, the fact that the penalty kill's been poor, I mean, I'd like to get out of that contract, the 2.4 at this point. So I think that was a bit of a mistake. Klingberg was a bit of a disaster, obviously. Like, I don't think you needed an offensive defenseman. You needed a penalty kill guy, not a power play guy. I don't really know what they were doing there, and especially given his health situation. But they did catch a break in that he went on LTIR, and then they had that $4.2 million to spend. And I think you look at what they've done, like, my question is just, where's that $4.2 million? Like, where'd it go? And what I don't like about what they did at the deadline is just that they have so many players on the roster, and I'd rather just use that cap space for someone good. Obviously, you have to go out and spend assets to go acquire someone, but, like, Martin Jones is taking up cap space. Connor Dewar is taking up cap space. Noah Gregor is taking up cap space. You have, like, eight defensemen on the team. I don't think you need all three of Benoit, Edmondson, and Giordano, and there's only one spot. I think there's some overlap there. You know, Gregor's like the 14th, 15th forward, depending on how you count Nick Robertson. And Jones, I just think, like, if you're going to Jones, you're out, right? Like, no team is winning a cup with their third goalie, it seems. Like, I almost think you want to take a chance and just use that cap space more effectively. It just seems like they swung and missed on Klingberg, and then they caught a break, and they didn't really use that for you know, a real difference maker or anything. Like, they went out and they added a bunch of guys on, you know, with retention close to league minimum, and it's not like they weaponized the cap space. It just hasn't been all that creative so far. I think looking at the offseason and how much cap space they had and how much of an opportunity they had, even though they don't have a ton of picks, I did think this team would be a little bit better behind the core than it is heading into the playoffs. Is that fair?
100%. It's funny because after when Klingberg was on LTIR, I think a lot of people went to cap friendly and looked at it and said, okay, they've got, you know, $4.2 million to spend here. Probably a little less once you do the math with the LTIR, but we won't get into that. But so, and it's funny because probably about a month or month and a half before the deadline, I looked at cap friendly again, and I was thinking to myself, I was like, where'd all their cap space go? And it's exactly with that. It's, they're just carrying a lot of players, and you're right, they didn't really use that space. Who would you say, like, would, who is the target that you would wish the Leafs kind of swung for and outbid other teams?
At the deadline?
At the deadline, yeah.
Yeah, like, I guess more of my problem has been with the offseason than the deadline, because, you know, as much as I like Bertuzzi and Domi, I like those signings at the time, as I said, like, they're fairly paid, right? It's not like, if you're trying to jam as much value as you can into $83.5 million of cap space, they're fine additions. They're not, like, complete massive wins. And then, you know, the Kampf issue, the Klingberg issue. I think if... I would have probably... Like, I would have liked them to go after... Try to do, like, a McCabe trade. Like, no one that... Like, the hard part is, I don't think there's anyone... I think the best trade would have been someone that didn't get traded, right? Like, where you're putting someone like Fraser Minton on the table. I don't know what was out there, so it's hard to criticize. I think their deadline was fine. Like, I think all three trades were reasonable. The Edmondson one, I get the least. Lobushkin makes plenty of sense to me. I think Connor Dewar makes plenty of sense to me. They didn't have a second, so you can't really go out and get a Tanev unless you're going to get creative. You can't really go get a Wenberg. I'm trying to think. I thought Toffoli went for pretty cheap, but again, you don't have a second. So
would you have given the first for Tanev?
No, but like I would have had Robertson on the table potentially. I would have had
for Tanev.
I don't know if Tanev would, like, I actually liked what they did with Lobushkin. Like I just wanted another forward, I think would have been, or at least like gone after another depth forward. I don't know. We'll get in the lineup in a second here, but it's hard to criticize Trey Living's deadline with the lack of assets, but it's not like he hit a home run either, where it's like he made a big trade that involves Minton, and now we can kind of evaluate, like, was this a big win, was this a big loss? it really, like, there's nothing of consequence here, right? You're just kind of adding fourth line and third pairing defenders.
I would say I do think the bare cupboards thing gets overblown a little bit. I think there's a difference between not having assets, and they did not have second round picks, which does make it more difficult. But I think there's a difference between, like, not having the assets and not wanting to trade the assets. And, you know, they didn't want to trade Cowan, they didn't want to trade Minton, they didn't want to trade the first just for nothing. And that's fair. But they had assets. Like, they had Holmberg if they wanted to trade him. They had Robertson. They had Liljegren. Am I saying to trade them? No, but I do think they had, like, the prospects. I'm sure there's some value in Torberg and Grabojnkin. And I think they could have probably done a deal if they wanted to. I just don't think they saw that price. But they do have, like, you know, they had the first. And really, that's just kind of the price of competing for that long. It's just tough to say that their cupboards are bare when you look around the league at some of the other teams that have been competing for years. And they're kind of, you know, still spending. But we'll see. I mean, for me, I would have probably done Tanev for a first, especially if they have a good idea that he's going to extend.
I don't think I would have.
No, I mean, I would have been okay. I think with the Giordano, like, they got him to extend. Really, the only ones that were kind of the outliers were obviously Foligno, which, I mean, you and I have a podcast about how we did not like Foligno at the time. We wanted Taylor Hall. But other than Foligno and pretty much this past offseason with Ryan O'Reilly, who had kind of personal, you know, I don't want to say issues, but personal reasons for not re-signing, and Shen. But really, they had kind of a turnover of the GM, obviously, at a pretty opportune time to I don't know if Tree Living had that much time to really negotiate with those players. And really, other than that, like, they've had a lot of their like big rentals either extend or they had term, like Muzzin, McCabe, Lafferty. They spent those picks and got years out of them, except there obviously were some outliers. So I would have been okay with the first for Tanev, just kind of seeing how important this year was. And I'm just not that convinced with Boston, and Florida's a good team, but I'm not that convinced with Boston just yet.
Yeah, I think a quiet deadline was fine. I think, you know, the issue was they didn't have the very good offseason, and then they couldn't really make up for it at the deadline because of the lack of, they didn't want to trade assets, or they just didn't find a deal that they thought was worth it for someone like Minton or someone like the first. I liked going Lyubushkin instead of Tanev, like, just going the cheaper route. We saw, like, Shen do very well last year with Riley. I did think the Leafs needed a little bit more up front. But the team's fine. Like, the team has a chance to win. It's just, given how much cap space they had this offseason, I think this team going to the playoffs, the roster behind the core is a little bit underwhelming. There's plenty of excuses for Tree Living, and rightfully so. Like, he did not have much time to prepare for the offseason. He kind of came in and the offseason was right away. So it's definitely not all his fault. And then you look at who the Leafs were trying to sign this offseason. Like, if they got Ryan O'Reilly, that would have just been, like, this team is so much better.
And O'Reilly competing for the division, no doubt.
O'Reilly just didn't want to play here, right? Like, you probably don't sign Camp for 2.4. I think O'Reilly signed for, like, 4.5. So, if, like, for an extra $2 million, you go from David Camp to Ryan O'Reilly. Maybe you don't sign Domi. Maybe you don't sign Bertuzzi. You get someone else a little bit cheaper. Maybe you don't sign Klingberg. That'd obviously be kind of the ideal situation. But I think the O'Reilly signing really hurt the Leafs. And then I think they're also interested in Ratko Gudas. And, you know, obviously he's a public enemy number one here, but that would have been much, much better than, and a much better fit than John Klingberg. If you go the defensive route, you know, I think everyone knew, every Leafs fan knew, like, you see the offseason, you go, okay, yes, I like the extra offense. And I was kind of getting tired of, like, the Kerfoots, the Aston Reese, no offense players. But they did, with Justin Hall leaving and Luke Shen leaving, I think everyone wanted a defensive defenseman, and they went for, like, the most offensive defenseman possible. So I think there's plenty of reason for criticism. on the bright side, like, there hasn't been any big mistakes that's going to hamstring this team. This team's still very good. But if you would have told me, like, this would be the playoff roster heading into last offseason, I'd be slightly disappointed. So, again, I'm not trying to, you know, roast anyone or be over the top here. I think this team has a chance to win. I think they've been very good in February and okay in March. But I do have some lineup questions, and maybe we'll get into, like, what you think of the lineup, what you think of different combinations. Anything else on the deadline?
I don't think so. I mean, one thing I will say is they have very specialized players this year. And even they kind of reinforce that at the deadline. Last thing to compare to last year. I mean, I just think Dubas had a lot of guys that were very good at many things, but not specialists in anything. Your Kerfoots, your Yarncroaks, Kasha, Justin Hall, just very good in different situations, but not, I shouldn't say very good. They were kind of solid in a lot of different situations, but not great in any. And then you look at how Tre Living, like, who he's gone for. Klingberg, pretty good offensively, not good defensively. Domi, a very good playmaker, liability defensively. Even Connor Dewar, good penalty killer.
Dewar is kind of like a Dubas guy, in my opinion. Like,
he's got some offensive upside. I mean, we'll see with him. I just think, like, Edmondson, obviously, there's no offense there. Lubushkin, there's not that much offense there. They're just a very specialist team now. Like, you're either good at offense or defense. And I think as a result, kind of getting into the lineup now, they do have some flexibility in terms of how Keefe uses them. They just need to make sure that it just makes the lines very difficult. Like, this year, having Domi on that second or at center, really has, it's been like kind of a bit of a journey this year trying to find a fit for him because of that defensive, that he is a defensive liability. So getting into the lineups here,
I think, just to add on to your point there, like, obviously, like, this isn't going to be like a 5-year history of the Leafs and like criticizing the Foligno trade and all that. I think everyone's kind of seen that. But I think versus last year, I thought last year they could have used one more offensive guy, like a guy like Domi instead of Kerfoot. They said so many defensive players, like Achari, Kerfoot, Aston Reese, even like a guy like Lafferty. Whereas this year, it's like, it would have been nice. Maybe you have a little bit too much offense in the offseason. You got to get a little bit better defensively. Obviously, they go out and get Connor Dewar. We'll see what he can do and how much he can improve the team defensively. But it's almost like I wish they could have added a little bit more offense instead of defense last year up front. And the reverse is true this year, where they maybe have a little bit too many offensive focused players. And, you know, when Yarncroke goes out, or even like a Bobby McMahon right now, they had quite a few players who, you know, obviously we saw it on the penalty kill that were kind of liabilities, and we haven't really seen the defensive results that we saw in previous years. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Different pros, it's kind of different funny cons. That's,
yeah. It's funny that it's kind of the opposite of what everyone thinks, like the narratives behind the GMs. Everyone thinks like Dubas is like this like small analytics offense only guy, when it's kind of the opposite. And people kind of look at Tre Living as this, he's going to come here, he's going to fix the defense, big mean guys at the back, which he has, you know, tried definitely at the deadline. But they're a very offensive team this year.
Yeah.
And the numbers reflect that, right?
And last year too, like, the Leafs went out and just added Dubas added physicality at all stops. Like,
yeah.
Luke Shen, yeah. Nolachari, Sam Lafferty hit, Jake McCabe hit. O'Reilly doesn't hit, but he's kind of a grittier guy. You look at even previous years with Bogosian and Hutton. Like, the front office is almost the same, right? Still Shanahan. I mean, Jason Spezza left, but like most of that front office is the same. I don't think the GM makes, you know, 100% of obviously he's the final decision maker, but he's going to be influenced by the rest of the front office. I would say, like, even like Bertuzzi and Domi, like, for 1 year, I don't think like that was a deal that, like, those were deals that only Tre Living would make, right? So obviously I don't know how much of it is different and what would be different. I think this team's fine. I think they have a chance. It's kind of nice watching a tough team, like, with that Boston game, even though they lost. But I guess the question is, like, you don't want to go in a playoff series, and yes, you out-muscle Boston, and that's all great, but you still lose, right? So I think the question now is, like, are you good enough to get by Boston and Florida? I don't know. I don't think they're as strong as last year when they went out and obviously spent a first-round pick and got O'Reilly. But it's a fine team, and if they can stay healthy, like, I do think that this team has some positives that the previous versions didn't, especially in terms of scoring depth. Like, Bobby McMahon's been great. Yarncroke's having a good year. Nyes is going to be, is just a year older than last year, not coming out of college. Domi and Bertuzzi can chip in some extra secondary scoring. There's definitely concerns, but it's still a fine team. Like, I don't want to be too negative here.
No. The problem is really a fine team's, like, the Atlantic is just too good every year. Florida is a good team this year. Boston has, they're I think they're probably a little overrated, but the point of the matter is that their goaltending is very good, and I would bank on their goaltending being very good in the playoffs as well.
Well, they weren't last year, so, but who knows?
They weren't last year, yeah, but
and they didn't have, I don't know. They didn't have Hampus Lindholm for those two games that the Leafs just played, who's an outstanding defensive defenseman. So the Bruins are, yes,
they
good
scored
goaltending.
One goal each game, so that's not a good sign. I mean, I would say that this is probably the most happy a Leafs fan base has been after two Boston games where they got outscored 8-2.
Yeah.
Like, in any other year, any other situation, I think people would be really upset. But, I mean, it was probably the most entertaining positive 4-1 loss the other day, because of Domi and Bertuzzi and just the toughness in the game in general.
Yeah, even, like, the GM change, I think, is kind of like a bit of a refresh. Like, not having to hear about, like, you know, should Dubas go all in and this style doesn't work. Like, just, I think half the fan base is just a lot more forgiving to True Living, and so far, because he's still in the honeymoon phase. It is kind of nice that, like, for some people, they treat it like it's year one. I don't know if I treat it the same way, but it is nice having, like, some different narratives here, you know.
From a media perspective.
From a fan base perspective. Yeah. You can't really complain about toughness because you have Ryan Reeves and all these guys fighting. So it's going to be hard to blame toughness this time around. I do think that they're not quite as deep as last year, obviously. Like, Shen played amazing. Achari played really well. O'Reilly played well. But, you know, when you have Matthews, when you have Marner, when you have Nylander, the years they're having, they're fully capable of going off. You just hope that if they have good years, like if this is going to be the best playoff year of their career, then you want to make sure your supporting cast is good enough to translate that into a cup, right? And not a second-round exit. So
yeah,
you don't want to waste one good playoff year from them, basically, right? So we'll see. Like, yeah, they could go for, like, Florida advanced out of all teams last year. Joseph Woll is a good goaltender, can get hot. Samsonov's playing really well lately. I think you address the penalty kill a little bit, so there's reasons for optimism. But really, I think this game is so much get a hot power play, get hot goaltending, and hopefully your stars play well, your depth just doesn't get scored on. The recipe's there, at least.
Yeah, two things about that. One, I do feel like, I guess, the vibes or the pressure has been kind of lifted off the team this year. It's definitely been the most, it's been a fun year. I think it's been the most fun year since probably 2021-22 when they played Tampa the first time. Going into the playoffs, that team was just so good. There was just really good vibes around the team, and with Campbell and Nett, the soup chance and the MVP chance for Matthews when he hit 60. So I think this has been a pretty fun year.
And the first round thing is done now, at least.
Yeah, well, you still see some of those jokes online. But I would say, like, with Tre Living, I think for me personally, on July 1st when they did sign Reeves and Klingberg and Kampf, I think that was all on July 1st. Like, for me, my expectations of the moves definitely lowered. Whereas, like, I think in the past, like, I'd probably look at, like, you and I had a full podcast about where I was complaining about the Malgin for Hunt trade.
What?
Like, like we were talking about that. I wasn't happy about that one. And I don't think that, like, I just think my expectations are a lot lower. It's just a lot more chill now rather than with Dubas. I think it was just so much pressure on the team. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I don't know if I really love that whole kind of narrative of like any team can get through. Like, oh, look at Florida that last year. Look at what happened with Montreal in the North Division. I just feel like the Leafs should be so much better this year, where it's not like we just have this chance and anyone can make it. So I guess like my lens is like, this should be a team that's like Colorado or Carolina, where they're a good team. They're going to dominate teams and they should be the favorite. So I don't know. I'm still kind of not that, I don't love that narrative of like, oh, well, hopefully Wool gets hot and we kind of are the next Florida Panthers that are kind of the underdogs going through.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll see.
I think it's good. Like, I think you're right. I think they're not the 7-8 best team in the conference, like Detroit or something, where it's like there's no possible chance this team's winning a cup. They definitely have the pieces where you can see it, but I think you're right. Like, there is a little bit of a sense of disappointment where this roster is not as good as they were last year, I would say. This roster is not in the elite Florida Panthers, Colorado Avalanche tier. I think Don Mischison's model gave him about a 4% chance of the cup, which is low when you consider, like, this is prime Matthews, this is prime Marner, Nylander. They had so much cap space this offseason. There is definitely an air, a sense of disappointment, I think, like a little bit. The team's a little bit underwhelming. The deadline was a little bit underwhelming. But there's still a chance that it works out, right? At least, like, it's not that I'm happy as of today, but I could see this team making a deep playoff run. I could see this team beating Boston and Florida. In hockey,
do you think they're the underdog right now to Boston?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, well,
what would you say the percentage is?
I think Boston's almost a toss-up, like a coin flip, but they'd be an underdog to Florida. And, like, Carolina, for example, just that, against all the range, like, they have a hard path to the final. But I think, as you said, like, they're not as dominant as you like them to be, right? Like, there's an easy world to see where this team has some struggles come playoff time. Like, if Domi's back at center in the top nine, or Camp's your third line center, like, that's not great. You don't have really the number one right shooting defenseman. It's not like they went out and got a, I don't know, like a Parayko or even a Jacob Chychrun. There's weaknesses here that you'd like to not have given the Leafs cap situation this summer. So I don't know, like the roster's about as like a little bit underwhelming for what we thought we were gonna get, I guess, heading into the off season. But again, like it's tough to be too negative when like they haven't. It's not like Treliving came in here and made terrible trades and you know screwed them for the next 5 years. It's just been a little underwhelming. There haven't been too many swings for the fences at this point.
What would you say in terms of the lineup? Like, let's get into the, I mean, they have so many players right now on forward and on defense. Like, what would you say right now you'd like to see regarding the lineup? Like, are there any things in particular, players you wanted to see, like with Matthews and Marner or in their bottom six or anything?
Yeah, so I'm going to start with the defense. So I think Labushkin almost has to play with Riley. It's worked out well so far. Obviously, you want to manage their minutes against top competition because Riley's not that good defensively, and Labushkin isn't really worth playing all that much. Like, you don't want him leading your team in minutes. I think McCabe Brody, they get ripped on for last year. They were really good against Tampa. Like, I think Kucherov didn't have a 5-on-5 goal, like one 5-on-5 point. So I think I would continue McCabe Brody. Let's see how it looks. Riley Labushkin, and then I think it's Benoit or Edmondson playing with Liljegren, right? So I think what Keefe has is the right approach. Obviously, if Liljegren struggles, maybe you see what Edmondson can do on the right side, but Benoit Edmondson is a weird fit. They don't really have a good puck mover. They're both left shots. Like, I think if you're going to scratch Liljegren, you should have got a right shooting defenseman.
Yeah. So you have Liljegren in the lineup.
I would, yeah. I think he's had great results on a third pair. I think you need another puck mover. I know he gets ripped on a lot. He's not really playing his best hockey right now, but I don't know about Edmondson and Benoit. Like, if your plan was to scratch Liljegren, I think, A, I probably would have looked at trade offers for Liljegren, and then B, I wouldn't have got Edmondson to replace Liljegren. I would have gotten someone who can move a little bit more to play with Benoit. But the other option, if McCabe Brody really struggles, I guess, is you'd go to Benoit McCabe or Edmondson McCabe. But I think for now what Keith has is probably best, because I think McCabe and Brody, those are going to be the guys that you need to go out and play against tough competition. Like, they haven't really had a clear shutdown pair all year. Like, McCabe Benoit played really well, but there weren't like a pure matchup line. Like, sometimes they're the third pair rather than like a clear we're going up against top line. So I think that's one of the questions I have on defense, is who's playing the tough minutes against opposing top lines.
Yeah, they do put Brody McCabe when they're leading sometimes, like at times during the year. But yeah, I agree. I do think they were pretty good in the playoffs last year, especially against Tampa. They got outplayed a little bit, but in terms of goals, they were actually very good.
But who else could it be? Like, what's your other option?
It has to be them. Yeah. It has to be them. There's no other option. I mean, you can't have Edmondson against the speed of Marchand. Like, it's just not going to happen. Benoit's impressed me a lot, but for me, it's like one of Benoit or Edmondson should be in the lineup. So I actually have a pretty similar lineup to you. Liljegren, for me, has to be in the lineup. I just think the things that he does, not many people notice, especially when we're watching live and it's an emotional game, things like that. We just tend to forget what Liljegren does. Even yesterday at the Boston game, there's a 2-on-1. Marchand has the puck. He makes a really nice play to stop Marchand in transition. And then moments later, he makes that pass to Marner. I mean, if Liljegren scratched in that game, Toronto probably gets shut out, because really, it was Liljegren who made that great pass to Marner, and then Marner scores. So for me, like, yes, they do need to defend the net. Liljegren does need to get better along the boards, but I'm willing to sacrifice a little bit of that for his puck moving and just how good his neutral zone defense is. Because realistically, like, the biggest complaint I have about Toronto's defense right now is there's a lot of guys that allow opposing forwards to enter the zone. Morgan Rielly, Edmondson, Benoit, Lyubushkin are all just not very good neutral zone defenders. I know a few of them can throw big hits, but if they're really not doing that, you know, they're not like TJ Brody or Liljegren in terms of neutral zone defense. So that's my biggest complaint. I do think they can defend the net well, and they're good along the boards, better than probably before the deadline, but I just think they're going to have to do that a lot, because there's going to be a lot of teams that are kind of getting into the offensive zone and spending time there.
Yeah, I guess with Liljegren, I agree with you. Like, he went out and played with Brody. Like, he started playing with Rielly out. He was playing well, but he was playing top competition some games and wasn't really looking great. I think if you can give him sheltered minutes, he's always done well there. So, you know, he hasn't played that well lately, Liljegren, and I could hear arguments to take him out. But I think if you're going to do that, you have to go out and get a right shooting defenseman, someone who can move the puck a bit, and they didn't do that. So for me, Liljegren's in. But are your pairings any different than mine? Like, are you going?
I think that's fine. I mean, I do think they'll probably go to 7D at some point. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Why?
Just when you look at the forward group. Well, because I think that you need Liljegren in the lineup. I think if they go six,
yeah, but
I
could do you see need Benoit? Scratching. Like, why do you need Benoit? I think it's Benoit or so Edmondson. Like, you just pick one.
I think that if the Leafs are in the lead, I think I would rather have an Edmondson or Benoit, especially in the third period, over Liljegren in. And I think you could
It's their offside. That's their biggest problem. It's your third pairing. So, like, I'd rather have the forward, I think. But we'll see. Like,
who's the forward?
Which forward?
Reeves?
I wouldn't play Reeves right now, but, I mean, he's been better as of late. We'll see. Like, I need to see what Connor Dewar
can do.
Well,
that's the decision
do.
That is going to be made. Like, do you rather want
no,
to
you
have
could do 12
on the lineup, or they're not?
No, you could do 12 without Reeves.
Okay, who's that? Gregor?
No. No, no, no.
Okay, then who's
the... Like,
who's the 12? Like,
Holmberg.
I'd be surprised. I just would be surprised if they go with 12 and don't include Reeves. Maybe Gregor. It looks like Gregor's probably the 14th forward in terms of Keefe's eyes right now. But, if they go 12, first of all, I think they're going to have Reeves in the lineup.
That's fine. I'd rather have Reeves than I don't think you need Edmondson and Benoit. Like, they're kind of redundant.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you need Reeves in the lineup. You know what I mean? Like,
but
I
at
think
least that you can run four lines and, like, give guys a breather. Like, seven is just so awkward at times.
Yeah. I mean, Reeves is going to play, what, like, five on five minutes anyway. So, I mean, in the playoffs, Matthews, the core four is going to play. I just wouldn't be surprised if we see 11-7 like we did last year in the playoffs, especially as the games get more important.
Okay, but assuming they go six, what's your pairings?
Same.
The same.
Sorry, did you have, what was your third pairing?
It would have just been one of Benoit and Edmondson. I haven't seen Edmondson enough to know who's better, but them with Ollegren.
Okay, and if you had to pick one right now?
Benoit, because I've seen him all year. He's been good, but...
Yeah, I'd have Benoit too. I mean, I guess we'll see with that. But yeah, that would be my six. Same pairings.
Yeah, and we haven't really seen Benoit Lilligren too much, so I don't know if even that works. But I think, obviously, like, you got about 18 games left. We'll see what works. But as of now, that would be my pair. Let's go to forwards. So, like, I don't think... I think we're going to have to revisit this in a future podcast once we've seen Connor Dewar. And I want to see Max Domi on the wing. To me, Tavares has to be your second line center. Like, I think that's just where I'm at. Like, the just from an ice time point of view, like, Tavares has had strong results all year in terms of expected goals. I did like the McMahon Tavares Yarncroke line, but I also like Bertuzzi Tavares Nylander. Like, I think the problem with that line was they weren't scoring. Like, Tavares went into a huge slump. Bertuzzi could not put the puck in the net to save his life for half the season. But I do think that you need Tavares playing as your second line center. And then I think they haven't had a checking line all year, like a good checking line. So I'm interested to see what they do with Kampf. Like, I did like Nyes, Kampf, and McMahon.
Holmberg.
It was McMahon against Montreal. But Montreal's not the best team. So I don't know if you put you put McMahon, Kampf, and Yarncroke might work, or you put Nyes down there. I don't know, but I'm interested to see, like, what the checking lines can be.
Nyes on the checking line?
Well, Nyes was so good against Montreal, like that Nyes, Kampf, and McMahon line, but it's only been one game. Like, I don't know if that's going to stay, but I think what I would do if it was today would just be, like, Kampf, Yarncroke, McMahon. You give Tavares's wingers... They were having success together to Kampf, and you give them tough minutes. But I don't know. It's going to be I think this bottom six is going to be very defensive oriented, unless you make a fourth line with Domi, which I'm open to. But I think Domi's really the guy that I don't really know where to put right now. Like, he played really well in the wing on Saturday. I gave him the first star in the Athletic observations, formerly report cards. So I think that's really the question for me is where does Domi play?
Yeah, I think that's been a question all year. For me, I would like to see him on the wing. I think Dewar was, like, I would like to see him at center just for stability reasons. I think there's going to be a lot of, like, Keith is going to try a lot of things over the next little bit. I do think there's a lot of spots that need to be won right now. I would like to see Holmberg McMahon in the lineup for sure. I've really liked how Holmberg's looked next to Kampf. The results have been really good, regardless of whether it's Gregor or Reeves as the third forward. There's just much more stability there. They're actually able to take on more defensive zone starts, which is huge for this team because they don't have enough defensive players. So I just like the lineup with Holmberg, Yarncroke, and McMahon all in the lineup. It just gives them so much more flexibility, and now Dewar should help that as well. Kind of just lets Domi be free, and, you know, we can see him fly the zone and get breakaways like yesterday, knowing that at least there's two players back, and they're a little bit better defensively responsible. Like, I think you can almost free Domi offensively if you give him two guys that can play well defensively. So that's something I'll be looking for.
Yeah, I think, like, the Matthews line, whether it's Nyes there, whether it's Bertuzzi there, whether it's McMahon there, whether it's Yarncroke there, they're going to be good. I have very little doubt about that. The second line, I think Tavares has had very strong results this year in terms of underlying numbers. I think if you put him with Nylander, you're going to have good results, whether you have Bertuzzi on the left, Nyes on the left, McMahon on the left, Yarncrook on the left. We also saw Tavares have success with McMahon and Yarncrook, which you could always go to. So I'm not too worried about the Matthews line, the Tavares line. I think there's plenty of combinations that work. I think it's really just maximizing the bottom six that I'm most concerned about. Obviously, with Kampf now in the top nine again, and Dewar also at center, one of them is going to be, unless one's moving to the wing, it seems like one will be on a checking line, one will kind of be on a boring fourth line. I don't know how that works. Again, I might try Kampf, McMahon, Yarncrook. I think McMahon and Yarncrook play really well together. Maybe that's your checking line. But that fourth line is where I wouldn't mind seeing Domi. Like, I've said it all year, but I think Domi's just best in the Spezza role where, and it's not a knock on Domi whatsoever. I just think he's a player with the skill, with the playmaking ability, with the transitions game, where if he's out against opposing third pairings and opposing fourth lines, he can capitalize. I think where I get frustrated with Domi is, you know, he was on a line there between Bertuzzi and Nylander and just didn't complement them well, didn't play very good defense. That line was getting caved in, couldn't get out of their zone. I think he had lost his minutes by expected goals. Like, it was like 11 to 12 games or something in a row. So I think Domi is just, I think there's a role for him where he has plenty of success. I hope it's like the Spezza role. I think that would be best, but I think really the first question I have is how does he look on the wing? Because he did not look good on the wing to start of the season. I don't know if he was just, you know, didn't really come to camp in his A game. Because he was just a really slow start to the year. I don't know what of that was playing the wing versus just not being good in general. So let's see how he plays on the wing. I think by next week, hopefully, we have a few games of sample and we can kind of say, yeah, he should be a center, or yeah, he should be on the wing, or at least that's an option, right? Because if he starts looking like he did at the start of the season, you probably have to put him back at center.
Yeah, it's Dewar coming into the lineup. I'm just looking at the usage on Saturday last night, and it kind of fixes a big problem they've had all year. Like, the biggest problem they've had all year is they just, whenever there's the defensive zone starts, this is just the problem they've had at 5-on-5. They've needed either Tavares or Matthews to take more than they've been used to in the past. Like, in the past, they had O'Reilly last year. They had that Kampf line as well to take a large amount of those. And then you could kind of just free up Matthews and the Tavares line. So last night, they had the Kampf line. So Kampf, Nyes, McMahon, two offensive zone starts and eight defensive zone starts, which usually the line that Kampf has been on this year, they're very, very heavy in the D zone. But then they also had a lot of on-the-fly starts for Dewar, but they had Holmberg, Dewar, and Reeves with one and two. So one offensive, two defensive, and then Matthews' line got five offensive, one defensive, which we usually don't see huge spreads like that for Matthews. Before the Dewar trade, and then Domi obviously got his six offensive zone starts and three defensive. So Domi, whatever line Domi's going to be on, most likely it's going to be more offensive. That's just the way that it should be. But it's just way more flexibility there for Keefe now that you have two lines that have, you know, more than one good defensive player in Dewar, Holmberg on one, and Kampf, McMahon really on the other. So I'm excited to see when Marner comes back. To see what the lines are. I'm sure Nylander probably maybe slots on the Tavares line. I don't know. We'll see. I don't see Nylander dropping to play with Dewar. I think that would be interesting.
That'd be weird, but you never know.
And I think it'd be even more weird. We've seen Kampf with Nylander before, so we'll see what happens when Marner comes back. I would say they probably put him back next to Tavares, like a Domi, Tavares, Nylander, and you just load them up with, you know, ozone starts, and then you put Marner obviously with Matthews, and then Yarncroke, we'll see. I don't know what I think. I mean, you could put Yarncroke anywhere and it'll work, but I feel like he'd probably replace Holmberg. I'd be surprised if they take off Reeves, but they just have, yeah, they have way more options in terms of their actual usage, which I'm sure Keefe is really happy about because they've tried everything. That's something I've really looked at this year, and I feel like they've tried so many different things to make that middle six work.
Yeah, I think the thing with Reeves in particular is, like, if you put Domi the fourth line, Reeves isn't really a great fit there. And then Reeves was just horrendous to start the year. He's been much better as of late. So it's like, what Reeves are you getting down the stretch? If he goes back to, like, early season Reeves, he's definitely not playing. If he the fourth line's been pretty good as of late. If that continues, probably going to be in the lineup or at least a candidate. And then I thought that Boston game, like, there's so many fights. Reeves wasn't in there, but you don't necessarily need him. I think you have so much toughness as it is. But Boston just went out and got Pat Maroon. So it's almost like a trade-off. Like, if they're going to play their tough guy, the Leafs play their tough guy, maybe it's just a wash. I don't know if that's going to be the situation. Probably.
I don't think so, yeah. Maroon's a lot better.
Maroon?
Still not that good.
I don't think Maroon's all that good. Like,
I don't think he's that good. I think he's better than Reeves, though.
It depends. Like, is it early season Reeves that was the worst player in the NHL, or is it, like, the guy as of the last few weeks that's kind of all of a sudden is a half decent player? So I think we'll see,
yeah,
what Reeves
is. I mean,
is.
His with and without you, I think he's the same player. I just think having Holmberg on that line instead of Gregor, who kind of just throws every puck away and they're always in their own zone, helps a lot. But in terms of Reeves' play, I think it's the same.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at Reeves' playoff results, like, his teams, he's basically on for no goals for and no goals against. So you're hoping for zero zero hockey. The issue is, like, A, you can't put him on an offensive line for obvious reasons. But B, like, if you play him with Kampf, like, Kampf can't go out and play top competition because he's not, like, you don't want Reeves out against Pasternak, for example, right? So it's a bit of a weird fit. Like, he is kind of a classic enforcer. If Boston's going to play Maroon, maybe I'm more open to playing him, but we'll see what he does in the next 15 games. I don't think Reeves is ever going to be someone who, you know, is going to go win his minutes, and you'll have, like, a 3-1 lead in his minutes in a series. So
yeah,
you can definitely do better, but obviously, like, depending on how the game's going, if you need more toughness, if Boston's fourth line sucks too, I don't know, maybe you can make the argument. I guess we'll see, but I think we need to see, like, how does Domi look on the wing? How does Connor Dewar look? What's he capable of? How does Edmondson look? And then hopefully, like, a week from now, 2 weeks from now, we can kind of revisit and see if our opinions change on the lineup.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting, like, they have play a lot of teams from the East in the next couple of weeks, and they're pretty much a 500 team against the Eastern Conference and a very, very good team against the Western Conference. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see how they do against the Eastern Conference teams. I don't know if that's just an outlier, but they just seem to play a lot better against the West, even against the good teams. Like, they played very well against Colorado.
Yeah.
Last week or the week before.
Seemed to have some sort of flu going around. I don't know if that had anything to do with the Boston. Or I think they got into Boston at 3 a.m. Like, who knows? I don't want to, like, overreact to those Boston games. Obviously not a good outcome, but we'll see. Obviously, Flyers coming up, Hurricanes, Flyers. I mean, a bunch of games against the East. We're going to have McDavid at the end of the month. A couple good games here at the end of the month, but a fairly reasonable schedule ahead, heading into April. Any last thoughts before I get out of here?
I don't think so. I know that we have some. We're definitely gonna be recording. I was gonna say try to record, but I want to be strong on this. We're going to record definitely more going forward, and especially heading into the playoffs and in the playoffs. And hopefully we'll have some exciting stuff coming up for you guys.
Yeah, hopefully the audio post, because we've had audio issues.
So if you hear this, it went well.
If you hear this, there'll be an episode in the next week or two. If you don't hear this, then who knows? It might be a while.
This never happened.
All right, thanks everyone for listening, and hopefully we'll see everyone next week.